Hello, America, and welcome to yet another edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logi, Teresa Sammons, and Patrick Mifflin. Say hi, everybody.
Yo.
Hello.
Yeah, we got a full house this week, fortunately, and hopefully that'll be more of a regular thing now. But, so we are officially in December, everybody.
Can't believe it.
Cannot believe it. We are literally only 23 days till Christmas, and on top of that, it's the last month of the year. It's sort of a cliche that you say it, but the older you get, it seems this time of the year gets here faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely true, because I realized today I got to get my Christmas list written down. I had like all November to do it, and I didn't do it.
Dang.
Yeah. So it's officially December. It's getting cooler out there. Of course, this is Georgia. So, you know, by cool, I mean it vibrates between 70 and 45.
Yeah. Like it saw a cop.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so this week on the show, well, among other things, we had the first, like the very first guilty conviction of seditious conspiracy in like over 20 years happened this week. We also had some news on the impending rail strike, or whether or not it'll still happen. We got some news out of New York about wanting to throw crazy homeless people into asylums. That'll hopefully not bite them in the ass. Kanye West has officially... Oh, who am I kidding? He was always off the deep end, but he has apparently found a new depth of the deep end that we did not know was previously like available to him. And apparently, San Francisco is trying to bring in the age of the Terminators. We'll, explain how that's happening. And of course we got a crap ton of teasers and official trailers for the media part of this show, including the, new Super Mario Brothers movie. Yep. That came out and it looks great. Looks amazing. And, of course, gamers hate it because gamers are the worst kinds of people.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. But, all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us all off, as we always do. We're going to just talk briefly about all the stuff we've been doing up to this moment this week. And, as always, as tradition, we start with Chris. So, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Mostly been working this week. Still have to work tomorrow as well, so that'll be fun. Been trying to enjoy the time I'm not working as much as I can. So I haven't been playing much of games, but have been watching some other stuff. Managed to get around to watching A Slumberland on Netflix, which is sort of their adaptation of the Little Nemo stuff. And this time around they get... a couple of big names in there. There's, I forget what his name is, Aquaman. But he's in there. He plays Flip, who you might remember from, like, the old Little Nemo Adventures in Slumberland movie kind of thing.
Jason Momoa?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's playing a very Beetlejuice kind of character. Having lots of bits and such, and being just a general scoundrel. Of sorts, and they don't necessarily go towards some of the stuff that you would expect if it was similar to that original animated movie. It's more that there is sort of a, I guess they go into having this girl being the main character who is living with her dad. In a lighthouse, and they are, you know, having a great time and all that. And then he goes out for job thing and ends up dying in the process. So she is left alone, gets taken in by her uncle, her dad's brother. And he is very much not a kid person, so much as he thinks. But as she kind of sleeps in her new house for the first night, ends up going on this weird, strange dream trip to Slumberland, meeting this flip guy who she finds out had some sort of relation to her dad. And ends up going on a series of adventures, trying to keep going back to Slumberland to try to find a way to bring her dad back. And yeah, it's pretty well done. It's nothing amazing, but it's got some really good visuals and such as they kind of break into other people's dreams. And continually this funny one with this little Asian kid whose dream is to just drive through this glass city of with his dump truck, essentially. And they just keep constantly barreling into him, having him drive them around. Kind of stuff. So yeah, pretty fun for that stuff. The other one, been dipping into my stack of Blu-rays I got from Black Friday and ended up watching Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which is pretty good. It's a good sequel to the original movie as sort of Tails is introduced and Knuckles as well, who is the person or the creature that gets Robotnik off of the mushroom planet from the end of the first movie. And so they kind of forge an alliance until he finds out that he's been used by Robotnik.
Big surprise.
Yeah, so ends up... And he's very much kind of used in the same way that like Drax is in Guardians of the Galaxy, where he's very much not able to discern what sarcasm is. And all that, and very kind of flat in humor, but very much wants more power and all that. So he and Sonic, you know, fight a bunch, have some good fights and all that before they join. And then let's say Sonic goes Super Saiyan. now that the Emeralds are involved and uses that to good use there. But yeah, by the end, the big reveal in the post credits is for Shadow to show up next time around, which is weird. Especially the way they do it is like, this is old project from 50 years ago that everybody forgot about. And they show like in the tube is like a Shadow the Hedgehog, which doesn't make any sense when they haven't had any of these kind of creatures before, at least as far as we know. But who knows? But yeah, I forgot to put one other thing on here. Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. That is pretty fun. It's more of a... It's like a 45-minute thing, so it's not even like a movie. But it does a good job of doing the thing it's trying to do, which is just have the Guardians kind of celebrating the holiday. That's the thing that they wouldn't really do because they're not Earthlings. But they try to find a way to cheer up Chris Pratt's character. And so they remember that his favorite person in the entire universe is Kevin Bacon. So Drax and the girl that can affect people's emotions decide to go Mantis, go down to Earth and try to find him. Which involves them like ending up at a bar trying to find people that know where Kevin Bacon is, and end up getting drunk as hell. And
as one does.
Yeah. Eventually they find him. And he is not exactly super receptive to two weirdos busting into his house trying to take him to their friend kind of thing. But yeah, it's a fun whole thing. Definitely worth watching if you enjoy the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff. But yeah, that's a nice little special thing they got up there. And the other thing I've been watching is One Piece. Still working my way through, I guess at this point it's the Enies Lobby arc, where now they're finally getting to some some big fights and some fun stuff happening there. So still working my way through that. And then the only game I've really put any time into this week is Rocket League. Finished up the last of the quests I had for the big event that ends here in a few days, as well as the season ending pretty soon. So looking forward.
It's good to have those standbys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to have something new to look forward to with the new season. So excited mm-hmm. for that, but that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Mine is kind of short. I've been playing Pokemon Violet. Mm. Like, for real. Just playing Pokemon Violet. Which is super fucking frustrating when it crashes. Everybody already knows about all the glitchy shit.
It got patched yesterday. Did that help anything?
I haven't played today, so I want to find out. I don't know that it's going to help my kid, because she already beat it, has every Pokemon Jesus. In Pokedex. Oh, this was like... She had 100 hours in it before we even got to Kentucky for Thanksgiving. It was pretty...
Jesus!
Right? Wow.
Gen Z is totally going to achieve ascension before we all die. Like,
so when you get drugs for ADHD and Pokemon comes out right as you're transitioning onto them, mm-hmm. holy fuck, apparently.
Yeah.
Jesus! Sorry.
It's only the ADHD.
Okay. So, yeah, I've been playing Pokemon Violet, watching a few things here and there, but, like, nothing noteworthy. It's mostly rewatches. And we came back from Kentucky with another kitten.
As so, one does.
Yeah. Keep in mind, we're only supposed to have two, but, yeah. So that's pretty much it. Yeah, I'm not even close to being done with Pokemon, but, you know, that's all right, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's all
I still
me.
Need to get a copy of Violet.
Yeah. Yeah. She did Scarlet, I did Violet, but turned out she didn't need any of my Pokemon because, you know, online.
Yeah.
So...
I'm still doing the Shining Pearl thing.
No, okay. Okay. Well, that's kind
of
cool, though.
GameStop still has my copy of Sword in Limbo somehow. It was said to be shipped out back on the 22nd, and it still hasn't been picked up by the carrier, so I don't know what's going on there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I've got half a mind to just cancel it and order a copy of Violet.
I mean... That's not a bad idea.
Okay. Right. Well, Pat, what about you?
Well, in addition to the playing the not current Pokemon game, I've been doing so much video production of late. It's been in equal measure tiring me out and just giving me a good charge, because it's been a while since I've had the creative energy and the mental energy to be getting back on this. I went back and curated a bunch of my videos that I feel are evergreen in terms of subject matter and can be introduced to new audiences now, even though I recorded a lot of them 6-7 years ago. And those are in a collection of those, and the ones that I've been recording lately are going up on the main site on Smashpad on a bi-daily basis. And right now there's enough of them to last I think about half the month. So, it's part of an effort to try and, you know, don't call it a comeback, because I never actually left Smashpad or, you know, anything like that, but I've just been off doing my own thing for so long and generally just being, a serotonin deprived piece of furniture for a long time, really. It feels good to have the energy back to be doing stuff like this, and you know, we'll see how it manifests itself moving forward, but yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot.
All right. Well, as for me, my gaming has basically been entirely divided between, I finished Persona 5 Royal, and managed to get all the extra stuff that goes into that game. Finished the extra part of it and got the true ending and all that stuff. And just for the record, if you've already played the original Persona 5, you absolutely should still play Persona 5 Royal because it changes things just enough that it can be very unpredictable at times. And it also has a lot of add-ons and stuff that just makes the game overall more enjoyable. You would think, it'd be impossible for them to improve upon perfection, but there you go. They did it.
They fucking are.
Mm-hmm. So after that, I've basically been playing two different things. One thing I've really been playing a lot of is Vampire Survivors. And I talked about this game last week, but we got more people here, so I'll describe it again, essentially. Vampire Survivors is essentially a twin stick shooter where one of the sticks has been removed. So the only thing you have to worry about is where your character is placed and movement. All of your attacks and stuff is done automatically, like every second or every half second or every 2 seconds, something like that. Visually and its whole scenario is basically 100% pure Castlevania worship. It's a, like, even like every, the whole game is basically you originally start out with a group of characters you can play, and they're all based on the original four from Castlevania 3. So it's Belmont, Alucard, Pirate Guy, and the Wizard, and as the game goes on, you unlock more and more of them. And the weapons that you have in the game are, again, pretty basic ones that you get in OG Castlevania. There's the whip, there's the throwing axe, the blue potion that, has fire, the crucifix that acts like a boomerang, all that. But other than that, the gameplay is essentially, you're trying to make sure that you're able to stay away from harm, and you rely on your automatic attacks to get rid of your enemy, get the enemies that you encounter. And this game is very much like a twin stick shooter in the way that it does throw wave after wave after wave of enemies at you. And the enemies are pretty stock Castlevania type stuff. It's zombies, skeletons, bats, Medusa heads, that kind of thing. But the way that the game plays is you're attacking these enemies so that a few of those enemies, they will leave behind blue crystals. And you want those blue crystals because what those blue crystals do is that they are what you use to upgrade. And it starts out you only need four of them, then you need six, and then you need eight. It doubles and gets more and more as it goes on. And every time you upgrade, you get access to more stuff. Like, you might be able to get a new item to work with. You might be able to upgrade an item. It's distance or it's attack power. It as it goes on, it gets to the point where you will. It's really hard to describe to someone who hasn't played it to understand how addictive it really is. And also how weirdly layered it is, because they end up adding more and more things to the game as you go on. What originally starts off is it's just a generic trying to get all the enemies on what looks like an infinite plane. Eventually it evolves to where you'll start discovering things there's these coffins with enemies around them. And if you get rid of all the enemies around it, you can open up the coffin and that resurrects a character that you can now use in the game. Or you'll find a map and the map will show you there's all these things that you can get on the map that'll end up giving you new abilities and, you know, stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. It's really hard to explain why, but it's one of the most addictive games I've played in a long time. And the other game I've been playing is Metal Hellsinger, which is essentially imagine Doom Eternal, but it also has a rhythm game element to it. And that's basically Metal Hellsinger.
No, I mean, that sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah, basically you're this demon called the Unknown who is trying to get her voice back. So she's trying to get to this chick called I think she's called the Crimson Judge or something. That's like the head of it. And so she has to destroy like aspects of it. And basically every level is done to the soundtrack of like an original heavy metal song that features like a famous metal vocalist from people like Satyricon and Dark Tranquility. Also the guy from System of a Down, he's also in this. Basically you're free to move around and you have infinite ammo for your weapons, but everything is done by rhythm, by the backing rhythm of the song that you're playing the game with. And the thing is, you have to do everything by that beat. You have to attack the enemies by that beat. If you do it, you know, you'll get more damage. If it's offbeat, you'll do much less damage. And that's everything from like the minor enemies to the big bosses and everything in between. And the game does like a bunch of things to help you like keep rhythm. There's obviously you can hear the song in the background, but like the torches that are everywhere will like spew fire with the rhythm. And, you know, the enemies will like have parts of them that pulsate and glow with it, you know, stuff like that. A lot of fun. Very intense, though. yeah, that's pretty much it for gaming. As far as like other stuff goes, I'm still listening to music, and I guess I told you how, guys, I recently got really obsessed with Sex Machine Guns. Pat, have you ever heard Sex Machine Guns before? Pat?
Maybe Pat, not.
Did you pass out on us?
Or went to get DoorDash?
He might have gone to get DoorDash. Yeah. Well, I'll just say it again. Sex Machine Guns is like a band that is like amazing, very technical heavy metal, but has the silliest fucking lyrics I've ever heard in a serious heavy metal band. They have like song, like one of their, probably my favorite song by them is called Midori Obachan, and it's a tribute to Stryper because it takes the riff from their song In God We Trust
to it.
And
that song.
Yeah. And Obachans, for those of you who don't know, those are the old ladies in green vests in Japan who help like little kids cross the street to get to school.
Okay.
They've got a song called Tekken 2, which is literally about, you know, a guy getting the shit kicked out of him while playing Tekken 2 and while playing with this little kid and how much he wants to kick the little kid's ass. Let's see.
Oh, God.
There's even their, like, eponymous song, Sex Machine Gun, which is literally just, you know, as you do. Yeah, great shit. They're basically, like, a Japanese version of, like, Strapping Young Lad or, you know, anything with Devin Townsend that's, like, less than serious but technically accomplished. Great shit. Yeah, and I also started watching Chainsaw Man. Yeah, that happened as well. Yes, it's 100% worth watching. I mean, I've already read the manga, so I already know how it goes, but very good shit. Early voting. I mean, not me. My parents did early voting earlier today. Because for those who don't know, down here in Georgia, runoff election happening for the Senate. And by the way, you want to know how long my parents waited in line to vote?
How long?
1 hour.
Wow.
Yeah. There is a lot of people that are wanting to vote in this one.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And this is just a Senate runoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the point.
Yeah.
Trying to dissuade people from doing it.
Yeah. And it's between, of course, the current incumbent senator, which, of course, is the Reverend Raphael Warnock, who is the Democrat, and, of course, the Republican, who is Herschel Walker. So, yeah. A lot of people in line wanting to vote on that one.
Yeah.
Wow. But, yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing this week. You guys want to add anything in before we move on?
Just that runoff race is like the craziest shit to follow in the news from not really afar.
Uh-huh.
But damn.
Yeah, and they were already breaking records for early voting before this week even started. So, yeah. And damn. You know what the crazy part is?
What?
If we're going by the votes that have been tabulated, it's still a dead freaking heat.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah, but, All right, so with that out of the way, it is now time to start everybody's favorite part of the show, which is Brandon Random Factoid. And, you know, me and before we started the show, we were sort of talking about a certain video that H Bomber Guy recently released about the origins of the oof sound on Roblox and the controversy around its creation and everything. And it kind of reminded me that, you know, we're all on the older side of the gaming generations, right?
We are now.
Yeah, we're all like in our 30s and 40s and everything. And so, you know, there's been like whole generations that have gone by and people are like, you know, there are major gaming figures that were like a big part of our lives when we were younger that a lot of younger people have no idea about. You know, people that just completely do not know about. Even though, like, yeah. You know, it's, and it made me realize that video that I was mentioning, a big part of it is based around Tommy Tallarico. And the weird thing is, there is a bunch of younger gamers who have no idea who Tommy Tallarico is and why he's such a big deal. Because, you know, for our generation, he kind of was. So I thought I would spend a little time to talk about exactly who Tommy Tallarico actually is, because for our generation of gamers, he was probably one of the first like major gaming figures that we really started hearing about like fairly regularly. He's kind of a big deal in spite of the fact that he's also a compulsive liar and a giant asshole. But okay, so who is Tommy Tallarico? Well, if you were part of our youth, you would know that Tommy Tallarico, probably the first like major composer of video game music in lifetimes that really got any major attention. He originally got his start way back in 1991. And in fact, that is also, you know, just he you know, so basically he started off working on stuff like the Robin Hood themes game for Game Boy, the Game Boy version for like quote unquote quality assurance. And then he did quality assurance for, you know, stuff like Prince of Persia, Game Boy version, MC Kids, all that stuff. Then he started doing like sound effects and stuff.
Imagine like being quality control on MC Kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yes, and for those of you who don't know what MC Kids was, it was basically a McDonald's video game tie-in that basically used the engine for Super Mario World. Yeah.
And you thought your job sucked.
Yeah. But then he started doing sound effects for like Batman Return of the Joker, which is a game from Sunsoft. But when people think of like the stuff he's really famous for, it's right around 1993 and 1994 when he started doing music for some more higher focus type work. Specifically, he did the music for a little tie-in game called Cool Spot. Now, I don't know how many of you play
fun game.
Oh, yeah. But far more fun than it had any right to be. Because it's literally a mascot platform based around the Cool Spot mascot for 7-Up Soda.
And it was a fucking banger.
Yeah, it was actually really fun. It was a really solid, like, Virgin Games style platformer that were, like, everywhere for, like, the SNES and the Genesis back in the day. Of course, the funny thing is a lot, like, most famously, the first thing, music you hear in that game is literally Wipeout. But him just digitizing it. But, he did, like, some other, like, less notable stuff, like Caesar's Palace, Color of Dinosaur, stuff like that. And then in 1994, he started working with a company called Shiny Entertainment. Now, if you were sort of our age, Shiny Entertainment was, like, one of the, like, they were one of the major developers known for having a really goofy sense of humor for their games. They're kind of the reason why Interplay sort of developed a reputation for making really silly games with silly premises and everything. And part of that is because they released their first game, which was Earthworm Jim. Now, it's been said for a while, we'll get back to that, that Tommy supposedly did work on Earthworm Jim. He might have, but it wasn't the music. He just helped sort of transfer and digitize the files over into the gaming format. When he really starts to get famous is in 1995. He actually did the music for Earthworm Jim 2, which is, like, considered to be one of the best as far as, like, you know, gaming soundtracks of the time is.
Very iconic of the era.
Yeah. He also did a bunch of stuff for some of the Disney tie-ins, like Disney's Aladdin and The Jungle Book.
Oh, those paychecks must have been good.
Yeah. And, it was also in 1994 that he released his first album, Virgin Games Greatest Hits, Volume 1. Which is amazing if you ever look at the cover art, because you see Tommy with his faux mullet.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It was the 90s.
It was the early to mid-90s, so yeah. He also, you know, so he did Earthworm Jim 2. He also did Spot Goes to Hollywood. Then in 1997, he did the music for a game that was put out by another Shiny Entertainment, you know, joint called MDK.
Oh, yes.
This was a third-person shooter that was originally a PC game, and it was eventually, like, ported to, you know, MS, you know, to Macintosh, PlayStation. I think there was even a Dreamcast port as well.
I think it was on Saturn.
No, it was also it was on Dreamcast too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it came out in 2000. Yeah, that game is famous for a number of reasons, other than the fact that it's basically a sci-fi shooter with the type of silly humor you would expect from a Shiny Entertainment vehicle.
Yeah,
that's more or less, like, he did also stuff like RC Stuntcopter. Then in 2000, he did probably two of the, one of his more high profile, which is a game called Messiah, which we will be getting back to. And that was a sound effects thing he did with Joey Kouris, which, again, we will bring up. And he also did the music. Well, he helped do the soundtrack and sound designing for a game that Shiny Entertainment put out in 2000 called Sacrifice, which, if you don't know, is a sort of a cult classic real-time strategy game with a bunch of really high-profile voice actors in the cast, like Tim Curry, for example. And then, like in 2000, Rising. The last, like, major music he's done anything for was in 2010, where he donated music to PETA for their game Super Tofu Boy, which, of course, was a ripoff.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. He's a big PETA supporter.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, does that make your opinion of him any lower?
Oh, we're going to get to that.
It kind of does.
It's possible.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get to all that, trust me.
Well, keep in mind, I still admire the man's work.
Yeah.
The art and the artist is different. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah. For all of it, you know, like, he does legit have a very big, like, portfolio behind him of some legit great tech game soundtracks and, you know, sound design. Then in the early, around the early 2000s, right around the turn of the millennium, he started doing two different things. One is he started a series called Video Games Live, which was a symphony concert orchestra series that he put together that he would play music from video games with him on his guitar, you know, with lots of lights and lasers and stuff, scenes from the video games in the background. They've all been highly acclaimed, and for good reason, because the concerts are legit really good. And they probably did a lot to sort of bring the concept of video game soundtracks a degree of legitimacy that, you know, kind of really didn't exist in the Western world at that point. But the other thing he also started doing is he started doing stuff for TV. He started doing stuff like Reviews on the Run, or AKA Judgment Day, on G4 TV back when that was a thing. Yep. He was basically the comedic stuff to, you know, his co-host Victor Lucas, which at the time, you know, he was running the Electric Playground website back then. Yep.
There was an air of cynicism to his reviews that I appreciated.
Yeah, but it also sort of started the whole trend of, like, yeah, so this is where sort of things start to go wrong, because two things you need to know about Tommy Tallarico. Number one, he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
He just is. He's a jackass. He's a jackass with stupid opinions. And number two, he is a bit of a bragger. He really likes to brag about the fact, you know, the games and stuff that he worked on. This would especially be a problem because every so often the games that he worked on would be up for review on Electric Playground. I mean, on Judgment Day. And sometimes...
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. But this is kind of the part where things start to go wrong, because I mentioned about, you know, all the stuff that Tommy has worked on over the years. And to be completely honest, yes, he does have some legit work that he's put forward that's actually really good, that has great quality and effort to it. But he also, it was around this time people started to realize that he was sort of bringing up the idea that he worked on stuff that he did very little work for, or that he may have not worked on at all. So one of the most infamous examples of this is Metroid Prime. Now, I talked a bit about Retro Studios a couple of shows ago about how it was originally this incredibly, like, ambitious studio that started up and then ended up being, essentially, they just kind of, they started downgrade to one project, and the guy who founded them had to go off because ended up getting fired because he was, like, you know, hosting a softcore porn website on the company servers and everything. And
Jesus Christ.
And then he went on and founded a company called Top Heavy Entertainment, which produced the Guy game, which ended up having to get having its first edition recalled and copy destroyed because it turned out that one of the chicks that showed her boobs in that game was underage at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That happened. Well, anyway, Tommy has for a long time talked about how he worked on Metroid Prime. And he's like, you know, he's like, yeah, I was the first, one of the first, he was the first guy to work, an American to work on the Metroid franchise with Shigeru Miyamoto, who said he likes my stuff and he wants us to collab and everything. Yeah, he did jack squat on Metroid Prime. It's possible that he might have done some work with it in the very like early stages of development, you know, during that time period when Metroid Prime was just one of the projects they were working on instead of the sole project that they were working on. But by the time the game had really come into fruition, his work with the company had long since stopped. And he claimed that he worked with Miyamoto on this game for 5 years. Yeah.
There would be some sort of proof, and there never was.
Yeah.
And I remember back in the day, everybody was like, well, why isn't Miyamoto saying something about this? And I think that there's a cultural thing where they're just kind of a little shy quiet with Western game people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to ruffle feathers, and Miyamoto's probably like, I don't know who the fuck this guy is.
Yeah.
You know, so he didn't say anything because... Well, firstly, Tommy Tallarico is probably a little too unimportant for him.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, it was just, it was really weird. I remember all that crap back in the day.
Yeah. By the way, he famously gave Metroid Prime a bad review on the show, too. Because his taste is kind of shit. But, Oh, and then there's also his claim that he was the first Westerner to work on the Sonic franchise. Which is, first of all, patently bullshit. he did work on a Sonic game, Sonic and the Black Knight, and that was through his company, which again means that it was more than likely Joey Kouros doing the work rather than him. But this is where sort of the thing starts to come apart. I mentioned Messiah earlier. Well, Messiah was this game that was another joint by Shiny Entertainment. And back in the day, it had, like, a bunch of hype behind it. Like, I know it sounds like it seems weird now because, you know, the game, you know, when the game came out, actually did finally come out, it was by a point when nobody gave a shit. So it just kind of was like a wet fart and nobody remembers it now. Back in the day, like it was a big deal that it was going to be, you know, because it was hyped in all the big magazines at the time. It was a big deal because, you know, it was using tessellation technology, which could increase or reduce the number of polygons based on the speed of the system running the game. It was being designed by David Perry, who's like one of the like superstar programmers from back in the day. He worked on the first Earth Jam. He worked on Cool Spot, and it had like this big pedigree around it, and it was going to do all this stuff. And then it just kind of came out. It was a wet fart. Nobody gave a crap. And Fear Factory did part of the soundtrack. There's also that. In that game, there's a sound effect on there. Because in the game you play a little cherub named Bob who is trying to remove corruption and sin on Earth. And while he's down there, he can like possess various people because he doesn't have any attacks of his own, but he can possess various characters and use their attacks when he needs to. If Bob is flapping around and accidentally like runs into a wall, he'll make this little sound, this little boyish little childish sound that sounds like if a little boy got punched in the stomach. He goes, oof! Now, sometime later, this sound would be put or bootlegged into some sort of sound library that would eventually get into the hands of the developers of a little game you may or may not have heard of called Roblox. They put it into Roblox, and pretty soon, oof became a huge part of, like, meme culture. And then Tommy Tallarico heard about it. And now he went into some legal disputes with their developer. wanting to get some proceeds, you know, even though...
Which, where's my money?
Yeah. Funny fact, like I said, Tommy did not do any of the music on Messiah, and as far as, like, the sound design goes, it's under his company's name, but the actual, like, metadata...
The assets were sold.
Yeah. As far as, like, the metadata is concerned, it tells you exactly whose name it is on there that developed the sound effect. And it's not Tommy Tallarico. It's Joey Kuras. And that's where all this shit starts to fall apart, because Tommy has spent a considerable amount of time over the years padding out his like career, his resume with a bunch of bullshit claims. He has claimed to work on games he never worked on. He's claimed like various records that he has no part in. He actually went to like Guinness World Records and like consulted to make world records for himself for promotional purposes. Some of which are completely bullshit. And then of course there was the recent thing, which was the Amico disaster. Which, after like papers and stuff leaked about the sort of what was going on at that company under his tenure, turns out it wasn't just like regular, you know, just incompetence. No, it was straight up like we're talking some serious fraud shit here. And if you want to learn more, go watch H Bomber Guy's recent video on the, because he goes into all this stuff. And it's really funny because you'll realize so many people are like, who's Tommy Tallarico? But for us, Tommy Tallarico was a big deal. And to see him fall like this is in some way kind of surreal, kind of bittersweet, but it was also freaking time coming.
Yeah.
And that's been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Well done.
Yeah. Oh boy. Anyway. With that out of the way, it's now time to move on to the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we have to discuss the assholes of the week. And this week, we actually had a big kind of thing that a lot of people did not realize had not happened in a long time. The founder of the Oathkeeper, Stuart Rose, became the first person in over 20 years to be convicted of seditious conspiracy in his January 6th trial.
Yeah. And that is a charge that can require up to 20 years in prison.
Yeah.
Nail him to the wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, they found him guilty of seditious conspiracy and other offenses.
Yep.
I'm trying to see what they got else. Obstructing an official proceeding and tampering with documents.
Mm-hmm.
He was acquitted of two other conspiracy counts. He did not enter the Capitol during the riot, but instead stood outside like a battlefield general surveying his troops, the prosecutor said. All five defendants on trials in this case were charged with seditious conspiracy, but only one, in addition to Rhodes, Kelly Meggs, was found guilty. Three other defendants were acquitted on that central charge.
Mm-hmm.
But all the defendants were found guilty of obstructing an official proceeding, as well as a mix of other charges.
Mm-hmm.
Jurors returned their verdict after nearly 3 days of deliberations.
Mm. Yeah. So the last time that this was done, the seditious conspiracy charge was done, was way back in the mid-90s during the first World Trade Center bombing. The planners behind that, including the blind sheik, Omar Abdel-Rahman, he was pretty much one of the, him and the group were the last people like back then to get it. And kind of what is big about this is it means that it's the first time that somebody in the whole, like in regard to this particular event has now officially convicted of seditious conspiracy, which means that, you know, it kind of peels away the any kind of, I guess, quote unquote ambiguity you could say about the event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's especially not good for Donald Trump because, yeah. But yeah, so that happened. We still don't know when. Did they say anything about when his sentencing is supposed to be?
I do not think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't see anything here about that.
All right. All right. Well,
there's also still more stuff to do about this.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, next thing is our assholes of the week are, Congress. Because the House voted to force a contract on workers to avert a rail strike. The Senate also passed it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of layers to this.
Oh, God.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, 290 to 137 in the House.
Mm-hmm.
I think 52 to 43 in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was it was 80 to 15 to votes in the Senate. They mm-hmm. rejected a measure to offer paid sick leave,
mm-hmm.
which was at 52 to 43.
Yeah.
Both measures needed 60 to clear the Senate. Mm-hmm. So only the main passing does. But yeah, this is a disappointing thing because this, you know, these people are supposedly so integral to the economy and keeping everything going that
mm-hmm.
they're not going to meet any of their additional requests.
Mm-hmm.
And this just managed to get the president to bypass the process entirely.
Yep.
For this stuff. So they'll get at least some of the stuff they had partially agreed to last time around, but.
Mm-hmm.
Not the main thing, which was, hey, what about some paid sick leave for an industry that made a shit ton of money last year?
Mm-hmm.
And every year.
Yeah.
I mean, the rail companies here, the biggest thing that they ship is coal.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole fuck ton of it.
Yeah.
Very wildcat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's still that way.
Yeah. So the question is now is it possible we're actually going to see a wildcat strike?
Yeah.
Because it's distinct possibility. I am, you know, I'm on social media and there are a lot of people very pissed off about.
Oh, yes.
It's really good to see that. Yeah. You know, especially like Scott has been working hand in hand with the rail industry since 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, wow. The amount of injustices is just
yeah. Any possible rail workers who are pissed about this, I would maybe encourage you to get in touch with my brothers and sisters in the IWW. They you know, they may have some things to tell.
Yes.
Wisdom to share. Because if it's not wildcatting, you're probably gonna have to revert to sabotage. But yeah, so yeah, that's happening. We'll see, because definitely not the end of the story, that's for sure. No.
No, and if you recall, there was shit about this just a few months ago.
Oh yeah.
The rail workers have been fed up for a long fucking time. And every quarter seeing these record profits and none of it going back to them. And it would only be a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame them. I stand with them.
It's like, and I think the people were like, you know, if we disrupt the economy, bitch, what do you think a strike is?
Yeah.
That's the
point. Yeah, because another one of the things that is huge that they ship is wheat and mm-hmm. corn. And, you know, that has a lot to do with our manufacturing power in America and our export power, too.
Yeah. But, yeah. Next up, Danny Masterson's rape trial. Hung jury in this trial.
God damn it.
How do you get a hung jury out of this?
They could not come to a 12-0 conclusion on any.
Well, no, I know what a hung jury is. Yeah. I'm
saying here they had, let's see, taken 7 votes over the last 2 days, remained deadlocked on each charge. 2 guilty and 10 for not guilty on count 1. 4 for guilty and 8 for not guilty on count 2 and 5 for guilty and 7 for not guilty on count 3. And yeah, so the judge declared a mistrial and set a retrial date for March 27th. So that's potentially going to get redone here early next year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, disappointing ending for this. But yeah, the jurors.
At least there's going to be a retrial.
Yeah, the jurors said we are not even close to coming to a unanimous decision on any count, and are convinced that this will not change. So yeah, very much a lot of people yelling at each other.
Yeah.
For a few days and nothing changing.
Yeah. So that's just wonderful. Next up, Eric Adams, mayor of New York City, has moved forward with a plan to involuntarily hospitalize homeless people.
Yep. This is your cop mayor doing cop stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, now it's officials begin hospitalizing more homeless people by involuntarily providing care to those deemed to be in psychiatric crisis. As he says here, for too long there has been a gray area where policy, law, and accountability have not been clear. And this has allowed people in need to slip through the cracks. This culture of uncertainty has led to untold suffering and deep frustration. It cannot continue.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they keep lowering the budget for actually helping these people with shelters and all that kind of stuff. From Jacqueline Simone, policy director of the Coalition for the Homeless. Mayor Adams continues to get it wrong when it comes to his reliance on ineffective surveillance, policing, involuntary transport, and treatment of people with mental illness. Homeless people are more likely to be the victims of crimes than the perpetrators, but Mayor Adams has continually scapegoated homeless people and other people with mental illness as violent.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's more terrible shit from them.
Mm-hmm.
Continually trying to destroy shelters and encampments.
Mm-hmm.
To just removing a lot of the resources these people need to help get them back on their feet.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Then next up, we've got Kanye West. That's it. That's it. I really don't have to read.
Yeah.
Kanye West.
Yeah. Sadly. Yeah.
Chris, go ahead.
He's had a hell of a week.
Yeah.
Going the podcast circuit, the Nazi podcast circuit, where he was on, who was it? He was on one podcast.
He was on Tim Pool.
Yeah.
Tim Pool's.
Using pronouns, just they, while they're talking about things. And he apparently thought they were talking about Jews, but not saying Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Just using they. Was getting offended when he was responding to him about that and kind of rebuking him on a fairly benign thing. And so he just walked out. Which, okay, sure. Whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, then went on Alex Jones's InfoWars show with a full ski mask all over his head so you couldn't actually see his face. But talking about things and eventually got to Nazis, as he's wont to do. And there's a good video out there of the whole segment where he's talking about this. And while he's talking about this, a clip from, American History X, the curb stomp scene, playing behind him while he's talking about... let's see here where the quotes they have here.
Oh God, the curb stop scene from that movie is brutal. Oh
yeah. But let's see here. Okay, yeah, he appeared alongside Nick Fuentes, who's his best buddy right now. Seems like it's. He said, "I see good things about Hitler," saying some other stuff, and then says, "Every human being has something of value that they brought to the table, especially Hitler." I think talking about like the highway stuff and some of that, which is like,
which wasn't for the record. Hitler did not create the Autobahn. He only expanded it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, then Alex Jones says the Nazis were thugs. He responds, but they did good things too. We got to stop dissing the Nazis all the time. Oh my goodness. Just because you don't like one group doesn't mean, Jones said, clearly uncomfortable. Kanye interrupted, "I love Jewish people, but I also love Nazis." Alex Jones responds,
"This is somebody making Alex Jones visibly uncomfortable and
This is Riley Alex Jones Stang. Having a $1.5 billion bill on his head saying, please don't ruin this for me. This is all I have. He responds, oh my goodness, just because you don't like one group. He says, I don't think Hitler was a good guy. Jones stated later, the most consequential statement he could make. Kanye replied, there's a lot of things I love about Hitler. A lot of things.
By the way, did we mention that he was basically wearing like a black sock over his head the whole time?
Yeah, that's saying this. What I said, the mask, the mask he was wearing.
Yeah.
So you can find the video of this discussion here with that scene from American History X playing behind it, where you're like, that's a real thing. Somebody consciously said, we need this queued up for a thing that's going on here.
Yeah.
He ended up getting suspended from Twitter.
Yeah,
by his apparently best even buddy Elon Musk.
Well, actually, what it wasn't that. What did it was?
No, I'm saying here that he posted an image supposedly of the swastika that is attached to the Star of David, which is not anything he made. It's from some cults from
the. It's from the Raelians. Yeah, that weird UFO sex cult.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that was their old emblem. Yeah, which obviously Kanye had no idea that that had any connection. He just saw it,
He's as like, this is a fun way to tie these two things together and just further make a point that I'm making.
Yeah.
That was deleted. But on Thursday, it was announced that he was no longer buying Parler.
Yeah.
Amongst all this chaos that was going on. Elon Musk was not happy about this, but Kanye, I think, last tweets, let's always remember this is my final tweet, posting a flattering image of Elon Musk half naked on a yacht. Musk replied, this is fine, this is not, he wrote on the deleted swastika tweet.
Yeah. Because apparently even Elon has his limits.
His limits are, don't make me look bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Did you see him talking about why Alex Jones would never be allowed back on the service?
No, I missed that.
There's definitely some evil, even evil has standards going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently his limit is people that make fun of dead kids thing.
Yeah.
Because of his whole thing with the.
Yeah, he lost his first. And when people came to him advocating for. To bring back Alex Jones, he let them have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's apparently his line, because he has, like, 20 kids. So anybody that's done something evil in regards to kids is on the list of not getting back onto Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, speaking of Alex Jones, he filed for bankruptcy this week.
Yes, he did, which we all saw coming a mile away.
But here's the thing. It might not really help him because, he filed Chapter 11, by the way, for those who are curious. Here's the thing. It might not help him because this shit is all associated with a convicted crime, which means that it's not going to hide anything.
Yeah,
he's going to have a fun day in bankruptcy court.
Oh, yes, he is.
Yeah, he... let's see. His petition reported that he had between $1 million and $10 million in assets and between $1 billion and $10 billion in liabilities.
Yeah.
There's that. Let's see. He's claimed on his show that he only has about $2 million to his name, but he does business through a web of corporate entities, including the parent company of InfoWars, which filed for bankruptcy in July, about a week before the first verdict in Texas. Evidence in that separate case suggested Jones and his company Free Speech Systems have a combined net worth as high as $270 million, that the company still brings in millions of dollars in revenue each month. Throughout the legal proceedings, Jones used his broadcast to ask for donations to help fight the lawsuit. Court filing from November showed that Free Speech Systems received nearly $3 million in donations through the first 5 months of 2022. The new bankruptcy filing covers his individual finances. And filed under Chapter 11. In his petition, he lists the largest claims against him, 16 Sandy Hook family members, an FBI agent who was among the first to enter the classrooms where the children were killed, along with $150,000 in credit card debt to American Express.
Wow. Well, he can sell his plasma.
Yeah.
That's what everybody else seems to have to do.
Yeah.
Deal with the program, buttfucker.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming. It really has.
Yeah.
But fortunately, it's not all bad, because we do have our heroes of the week to talk about. So, first and foremost, yes, the Senate did kind of screw over the rail workers, but they also voted to pass the Respect for Marriage Act.
Yeah, 61 to 36
yep.
votes. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's called bipartisan support these days.
Yeah.
Where you get 100% of one side and like 25% of the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I would call equal and bi, but no.
Yeah, the rail strike thing got 80 votes.
Yeah.
In case you want to know where things are at there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this codifies same-sex and interracial marriages, at least protection of it. If you get married in a state that supports it,
mm-hmm.
Everybody else has to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Can't just annul it over their own bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at least the good part of it. It's not going to make it legal to do that in any state you want.
Mm-hmm.
But those people that would need to could travel to another state for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And probably at least get the legal stuff done and then
mm-hmm.
have a celebration wherever they want in their own state.
Mm-hmm.
They'll wait until that gets outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the bill would require that all states recognize same-sex interracial marriages performed in any other state. Now require that states individually allow these marriages to be performed. Measure also would recognize these marriages for consideration of federal benefits such as Medicare and Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Amendments to the original House passed bill led by GOP negotiators Susan Collins, Tom Tillis, and mm-hmm. Rob Portman make sure that nonprofit religious organizations are not required to help perform mm-hmm. a same-sex marriage. So, yeah.
So obviously it's not perfect. It's got some weaselly stuff that was put into it. Honestly, other than that, definitely a good thing. And what's especially fun is seeing all of the religious moral majority evangelical people crying about how they felt so betrayed about it.
Their tears are delicious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It also means a lot of these groups are going to suddenly find themselves drying up with funds because, you know, once this is officially passed into law, because it still has to go to the House, where it will almost surely win, it then just takes a trip up to President Biden's desk, who will surely sign it. And
he's the one who asked him to put it there.
Yeah. And that'll be the end of it. You know, it'll officially be enshrined in law. Same-sex marriage and interracial marriage will be enshrined in law. There will be nothing they can do about it.
No special asshole award and all this goes to Mitch McConnell, who voted against it while being in an interracial marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's because he doesn't consider it interracial.
Yeah.
Because they're both of the same political mindset.
Yeah. And social class, but that's another discussion.
I don't know. She's probably way ahead of him.
Oh, yeah. And then our other hero.
The only race they're acknowledging is rich.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And then our other heroes of the week, the U.S. men's national team beat Iran 1-0 to move to the World Cup.
This tournament has been so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got that one goal because their big veteran Christian Pulisic managed to kick a nice header goal into the net or header pass into the net.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, the goalie's foot hits him right in the crotch. He has a, I think, pelvic contusion.
Oh,
he's hoping to God. He's hoping to play here on Saturday.
Yeah, they wear cleats.
Yeah. That's always a fun way to go. But yeah, this was a good 1-0 win.
Mm-hmm.
They move on to play Netherlands here on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another team that did not make it into the World Cup last time around in 2018.
Yeah. What was especially weird about it was that apparently the Iranian team was actually like celebrating their defeat, and it kind of has to tie in with all the shit that's going on back in Iran right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let them have that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Also props to Saudi Arabia for waking up Argentina. They picked up a big win, but now everybody cries.
Yeah. And then finally, our last Heroes of the Week. Federal Appeals Court ended the special master review of documents seized from Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate.
Yep. Should make for good airplane reading.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's, let's see here. Decision by the three-judge panel represents a significant win for federal prosecutors, clearing the way for them to use, as part of their investigation, the entire tranche of documents seized during the August 8th FBI search of Mar-a-Lago. It also amounts to a sharp repudiation of arguments by Trump's lawyers, as well as the arguments that the judge themselves had, or sort of the entire document that was put out of the decision here seemed to be a textbook case of them saying this judge is not qualified in any way to be doing their job.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't.
It was the whole thing was basically a red herring from the beginning. It was an attempt to try and prolong the process, and it ultimately blew up in his face. So
good.
Yeah. And now that he's very slowly becoming persona non grata Republican Party, he doesn't really have a whole lot of shit, a lot of angles to work with now. So yeah. Anyway, that's it for the show proper. Now moving on to the proper show proper. First story for that is the World Health Organization has officially renamed monkeypox as simply Mpox.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really too much there. They announced the long-awaited change on Monday, saying the disease's original name plays into racist and stigmatizing language. But it'll take time to replace the term.
Mm-hmm.
That for this... disease has been around for over 50 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Both names will be used simultaneously for 1 year while monkeypox is phased out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll take a little time, but good to get the name changed.
Oh, yeah. And then as far as politics, as everybody knows, Pelosi is stamping down from her position as, House leader of the Democratic Party, and they decided that they are officially electing Representative King Jeffries as the new leader.
Yeah, he's the first black person to lead a major political party in Congress. Mm-hmm. So good to see there. Let's see, Rep. Catherine Clark will be Jeffries' number two, and Rep. Pete Aguilar as the third ranking leader.
Mm-hmm.
He ran unopposed. He's 52, so 30 years younger than Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
And will probably be there for quite a while. So yeah, hopefully he can be as successful as she was.
Yeah, or more, frankly. He seems to be a bit more direct and tougher than she was. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Next up, the San Francisco's Board of Supervisors considering allowing the San Francisco Police Department's use of robots to use deadly force. And yeah. For the record, that doesn't mean that they're guns. Instead, they're going to have them use explosive charges.
Like that's not better.
Yeah, like that somehow is supposed to make me feel better.
Yeah.
Have we not had about 700 sci-fi movies about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're offering updates. They voted to approve this.
So 1 minute you're jaywalking and the next you're running away from Gunjack.
Yeah.
That was a Tekken 3 reference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a new California law that became effective this year that requires every municipality in the state to list and define the authorized uses of all military-grade equipment in their local law enforcement agencies. This is sort of all the different municipalities sort of making decisions, and San Francisco is one of the biggest in the state.
Mm-hmm.
They said, sure, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And next up, Jeffrey Epstein's estate, because unfortunately that is still a thing that exists. They reached a $105 million settlement with the Virgin Islands. So,
this ends a nearly three-year legal saga for officials in the U.S. territory, which sought to hold Epstein accountable for after he was accused of sexually abusing dozens of underage girls,
mm-hmm.
and of causing environmental damage to the two tiny islands he owned in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
The islands will be sold as part of this agreement. So, yeah. At least some good stuff happening out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed to pay the territorial government $105 million in cash and half of the proceeds from the sale mm-hmm. of Little St. James Island, where Epstein owned a home, and authorities allege many of his crimes took place.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what was going to happen to that island, because it wasn't just going to sink into the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the estate will also pay $450,000 to repair environmental damage on Great St. James, another island Epstein owned,
mm-hmm.
where authorities say he removed the ruins of colonial-era historical structures of slaves.
Yeah.
The money from the sale of Little St. James Island will be placed in a government trust
mm-hmm.
to finance projects, organizations, counseling, and other activities to help residents who have been sexually abused.
Yeah.
So it'll be good coming out of that money.
All right, so next up, do you guys remember Jacob Wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't remember, he was that little shitbag who was doing like a bunch of fraud shit to try and help get Trump elected. But the one that finally got him was the robocall shenanigans he pulled back in 2020.
Yeah.
Well, the sentence for that finally came down, and after the robocall shenanigans in 2020, Jacob Wall and his body were sentenced to register voters in underprivileged communities.
Yeah, mainly Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
They'll have to spend 500 hours registering people to vote,
mm-hmm.
thanks to a legal sentence from an Ohio judge.
Yeah.
Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman mm-hmm. robocalled roughly 85,000 voters across Michigan, New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Ohio in the summer of 2020. Falsely telling them that voting by mail would risk giving your private information to the man.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a message that really makes it seem legit.
Mm-hmm.
There, prosecutors say the pair were targeting neighborhoods known to have a high percentage of black voters. The robocaller claimed to be with a non-existing group called the 1599 Project.
Mm-hmm.
Falsely said the voters' information would go into a database accessible to police, debt collectors, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a hell of a spread of people, which would use the information to impose vaccine mandates. Jeez, they just went for it.
Mm.
The caller cited no evidence to support these claims. Those two claimed they weren't responsible initially, but ended up pleading guilty to telecommunications fraud in Ohio in October.
Mm-hmm.
Sentenced them to 2 years of probation, 6 months of monitoring with a GPS ankle bracelet,
mm-hmm.
$2,500 each in fines, and 500 hours of registering voters in Washington, D.C.
Mm. Yeah.
And Wall apparently expressed his absolute regret and shame over all this, which is more in that he got caught.
Mm-hmm.
That was only one of several high-profile acts that the two used to spread disinformation ahead of the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
They tried and failed to frame Robert Mueller, Pete Buttigieg, and Anthony Fauci of sexual assault allegations.
Mm-hmm.
Staged a phony FBI raid on Jack Berkman's own house, successfully fooling the Washington Post into doing a story.
Mm-hmm.
They allegedly stole the phone of a White House liaison that Wall was dating to tweet out false allegations from her account.
Mm-hmm.
Then said she'd accused Wall of kidnapping. So the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is also considering fining the pair a record breaking $5 million for making robocalls to cell phones without consent. So I hope that goes through. But they're also facing felony charges in Michigan, plus lawsuits from various civil rights groups and the state attorney general in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they fucked around and they are finding out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maybe something good will come out of it, but I won't hold my breath. Next up, Merriam-Webster's word of the year is gaslighting. because shit, we all experienced a shit ton of it this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, lookups for the word on Merriam-Webster increased 1,740% in 2022 over the year before. But something else happened. There wasn't a single event that drove significant spikes in the curiosity, as usually goes with the chosen word of the year. The gaslighting was pervasive. It's a word that has risen so quickly in the English language, and especially in the last 4 years, that it actually became came as a surprise to me and many and to many of us. Said Peter Sokolowski, Merriam-Webster's editor-at-large. It was a word looked up frequently every single day of the year. Their top definition for gaslighting is a psychological manipulation of a person, usually over an extended period of time, that causes the victim to question the validity of their own thoughts, perception of reality, or memories, and typically is confusion, loss of confidence and self-esteem, uncertainty of one's emotional or mental stability, and a dependency on the perpetrator. A tool that's used frequently by abusers and liars. There you go.
Yeah. And now for some just stupid news. A woman is suing Kraft over misleading advertising of Velveeta shells and cheese.
Yeah, what? Particularly how long it takes to make it, the preparation time. Let's see. Yeah, a 15-page class action lawsuit filed earlier this month alleges that parent company Kraft Heinz sells more of the product and at a higher price than it would if it didn't mislead consumers about the pasta's prep time. The advertiser is being ready in 3.5 minutes. The woman here, Amanda Ramirez, says that's only the amount of time each cup needs to be microwaved. At the actual preparation process, from stirring in water to letting the cheese sauce thicken, takes longer. And she does not specify how much that means.
Yeah.
You want to guess what state she is from?
Is it Florida?
Bingo. As a result of the false and misleading representations, the product is sold at a premium price, approximately no less than $10.99 for 8 2.39-ounce cups, excluding tax and sales, higher than similar products represented in a non-misleading way, and higher than it would be sold for absent the misleading representations and omissions. It's sold that high because they are the top product in that category.
Yeah, and it's the premium one of all of the microwave cheesy macaroni things that are out there.
Guess what? If you want to save money, get the knockoffs.
If you want to save money, just cook it on the goddamn stove and make a whole big old batch and then, you know, reheat it as leftovers. I'm sorry, is that not what the rest of the world does?
Yeah, well, how long does that take?
I don't know. It depends on your fucking stove. But no, I think you have to boil it for like 8 to 10 minutes after, you know, after you put in the noodles. And then you stir in your shit, and you're good.
I mean, it's really not that long. Barely 3.5 minutes.
Well, then she has fucking other problems that Kraft can't help her with.
That's why she's in Florida.
Yeah, it's called time management books. Read them. Wow. Sorry.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so... moving on from there, we are now thoroughly in the entertainment part of the show, and we'll start off with this little bit, which is that Mandalorian Season 3 is debuting March 1st on Disney Plus.
Cannot get here quick enough.
Yeah.
Yep, debuting on Disney Plus. It was previously reported as February, but they finally announced an actual date for this. Well, technically you could say it's February 29th. But whatever. Takes place after the events of The Book of Boba Fett, which was season 2.5. For as much as he was in that.
Right.
But yeah, all your favorite people are back. Carl Weathers, Giancarlo Esposito, and Katie Sackhoff are all returning.
Yeah.
Although they're going to have Christopher Lloyd this season.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, And now we got a shit ton of trailers.
Yeah.
First and foremost, we got the official trailer for Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny.
Yeah, CG-filled trailer.
Was it?
Especially, I think that a lot of the work is making younger versions of himself.
Mm-hmm.
As it seems like it kind of tells various stories throughout his life that weren't in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
As he, I guess, flashbacks or whatever. Maybe that's just for the trailer. Or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of stunt work that's CG filled. But they do have people from his past show up.
Mm-hmm.
So you got different of those characters showing up here. As well as himself in his... I think it's 1969. It's the modern day for this.
Mm.
But yeah, that'll be out June 30th, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Only in theaters.
Okay. They're going hard on that one.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh boy. I just, after the absolute train wreck that was Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I just...
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I think we're all a little traumatized and gun shy.
Mm-hmm.
That was really shit.
Yeah, well, we also got an official trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Looking pretty good.
Yep.
They're very much teasing this, like, the end of whatever is going on here.
Mm-hmm.
For them.
Okay.
That has a good bit early on where they land on this alien planet.
Mm-hmm.
This kid's playing with the dodgeball and Drax just beans a kid with it. To cause a lot a lot of chaos there. So, yeah, lots of fun times there.
Mm.
But yeah, there you go. It's out only in theaters May 5th, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
As they get this next phase of the MCU off to a big start.
Mm.
With a bunch of movies next year.
Mm-hmm. And next up, we got a teaser trailer for Netflix. The 90s show.
Yeah, that 90s show.
Didn't they already do that? Or was that just the 80s show?
They did the 80s.
And it fell immediately on its ass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an official continuation 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
The Leia Forman, daughter of Eric and Donna, is visiting her grandparents for the summer in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Where she bonds with the new generation of Point Place kids under the watchful eye of Kitty and Red Foreman.
Yeah.
Both of them returning. They're
going to make that show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which definitely has some good bits of Red just being a complete grumpy ass.
Yeah.
Especially like she's handing out, I think, brownies out to people.
Mm.
And she's like, oh, enjoy, enjoy. It's like, this one's got extra frosting. He's like, that was mine.
Mm.
And just he goes to lock the door. She's like, we don't lock the door. What we do now? Other kids around.
Oh gosh.
And yeah, they still get high in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
You think Red and Kitty would have noticed that there's a different odor without the kids down there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At some point.
Kind of a nostalgic one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the same creative people and all that running this, so should hopefully be pretty good, but that'll... Not sure if they have a date for this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see a date, so... Sometime next year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next up, we got a teaser trailer for Transformers Rise of the Beast.
Yeah, where they introduce... Let me see, they got the names of the... The Maximals, the Predacons, and the Terracons to the existing battle on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
That's too many names to keep up with.
Yeah, it's all the ones from Beast Wars and such.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Stephen Caple Jr., starring Anthony Ramos, going from Hamilton to this.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Dominique Fishback will be out in theaters June 9th, 2023. And yeah. Seems all right, but I've only seen the first movie, so I don't care about the series anymore.
Yeah.
Since they sent the one character's soul to heaven after he dies. Not heaven, Transformers heaven in the second movie.
Yeah. And then we got, yeah. And then we got an official trailer for Cocaine Bear.
Yeah, this is the most exciting one of all.
Mm-hmm.
So this is based on a story that happened in, I think, around 1985.
Yeah.
Where, like, a drug runner's plane crashed and a bunch of cocaine went missing.
Yeah.
And apparently a bear ate it before it died. Mm-hmm. And there's a good article that was joking, like, for 5 minutes, that bear was the most dangerous apex predator on the planet.
Yeah.
And so this posits what happens if a bear starts eating a bunch of cocaine, and this might be Ray Liotta's last movie.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's any other things he would have worked on potentially before he died, but
holy shit, that's the IKEA guy.
Yeah, that's the big comedian from TikTok.
Yep.
So yeah, playing one of them, there's Kerry Russell, O'Shea Jackson Jr., Alden Ehrenreich, Jesse Tyler Ferguson. Yeah, a bunch of people in this of note. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Margot Martindale and Emmy winner Ray Liotta.
Yep.
Like, no guy does not believe that there is a bear completely high on cocaine just killing people.
Because there's always the one. Yeah.
And it's a great trailer. They usually
get their insides turned to outsides.
Yeah. And we got an official trailer for The Mean One, a.k.a. The Grinch Goes on a Rampage.
Yeah, this is another turn, but this one, the Grinch is not public domain yet.
Nope.
That's why it's called The Mean One.
Yeah.
They call him the Grinch in this.
Nope.
At all, they maybe say it's a Christmas horror. Yeah, The Mean One, a Christmas horror parody.
Mm-hmm.
Be out December 9th. Mm-hmm. I guess. David Howard Thornton is starring in this, who is Art the Clown in Terrifier 2.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that I guess was so terrifying that it caused people to vomit.
Oh, God.
In the theater or something.
Yep.
Something like that. So, sure.
Sure.
But apparently Cindy Lou Who survives his first killing.
Mm-hmm.
And gets away to Newville,
mm-hmm.
where the Grinch returns to kill more people.
Yep.
So, okay.
Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people who are going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go.
And finally, last but not least, we got the official trailer for the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah, a trailer that is very much a trailer for a kids movie, meaning that there's like 50 scenes being shown here, and it's hard to discern how any of this happens. Because mm-hmm. There's a whole Mario Kart bit here for a while. There's a whole big arena battle with Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm.
There's like some Luigi's Mansion shit mm-hmm. in there.
They basically tried to shoehorn the entire franchise in there then.
Yep.
Yeah, somehow. And I guess potential leaks are saying this is going to be like an 86-minute movie, which
oddly specific.
Further makes it confusing how they fit all this stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's some good voice acting in there.
Yeah.
Mario's still a bit weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, Luigi seems perfectly fine.
Yeah.
With Charlie Day, Jack Black is great as Bowser.
Yeah.
Keegan-Michael Key seems good as Toad.
Yeah.
There's not enough Donkey Kong to understand if that's what Seth Rogen's doing there.
Yeah.
Anya Taylor-Joy seems good as Princess Peach.
Yeah.
Let's see. Fred Armisen is Cranky Kong, which I don't know. That, again, there's still not enough of that to know. Kevin Michael Richardson is Kamek, which that was in the first trailer. Seems pretty good. And Sebastian Maniscalco as Spike, which I don't know if that was really even in there.
Mm-hmm.
So weird, but also there's lots of little details you can find in the video and all that. I don't know if they posted the poster itself, but then the Donkey Kong scene, you kind of see like Diddy and Dixie and some of the other Kongs in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there you go. That'll be out April 7th. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, as you could probably guess, the gamers hate it because Peach isn't just a one-note damsel in distress.
And she puts a suit on when the Mario Kart bit.
Yeah.
Unlike the one she wears in the Mario Kart games.
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, so I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. Whew. And,
sorry.
I've done that so many goddamn times that I do it by Rota Note, and somehow I still manage to fuck it up. anyway, so we're going to go ahead and wrap things up here. Be sure to tune in Sunday for the Day Zero update, because I'll still be on there. Also, check out Smash Bad, because we got some new stuff coming our way. We're in the process of, kind of updating the site and the software and everything and trying to get it all nice and souped up for the new year. And, of course, be sure to check out our game year coming sooner rather than later. If we can scrounge enough information to make.
It was really a shit year for games, at least for games that weren't re-releases, collections, or just, lapsed localizations.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there, and we will see you all next week. Welcome to December, folks. Your wallet is going to hate you. Night.